Glad to be joined by Real Clear Politics White House correspondent Philip Wegman. There's lots to talk about, including a joint press conference today, one of the first in a long while. I don't remember the last time I saw Biden taking questions at the White House and a joint presser with the Prime Minister from the UK. Mr. Wegman, welcome to the show. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. I guess, first of all, I'll ask, I don't mean to put you on the spot. Were you a part of the proceedings today at the White House?
I was not at the White House press conference today. You're completely right. We don't often get many of these chances for a press conference with the president. Usually they come during bilateral meetings with another world leader. And sometimes it's luck of the draw. Either the lower press team has told the president which reporters they want him to call on, or the president sometimes opens it up to more of a free-for-all. But from what I've seen, this was a pretty tame one. So I think I might have made the right call by hunkering down and filing a different story.
Yeah, and just because I'm curious about the way it works, I think we all kind of understand that Biden is, to put it mildly, pretty carefully handled. Are there any questions coming at him he's not fully prepared to hear, as best you can tell?
So this is really a interesting question, because a lot of the White House press corps, their entire consciousness was shaped by the previous president. With Donald Trump, it was the Wild West. You could show up. I remember some of these COVID pandemic briefings where he would take so many questions that you
2 hours long
out. Yes, you would run out of questions about the pandemic. And towards the end, you would feel a little bit guilty because you would start asking rank political questions. It was a free-for-all. Joe Biden is not that way. I compare his administration to a well-oiled DMV if the Trump administration was the Wild West. They have a plan. They know what they're doing. They don't leak. They push a message. And so the Biden administration, not unlike the presidencies of Barack Obama or George W. Bush, they go into these press conferences prepared, and they've talked to reporters beforehand, usually about potential topics that are going to be discussed. Often the president has a list of reporters that he calls on, gives his answers, and calls it a day.
Philip Wegman with this Real Clear Politics White House correspondent. You co-authored a piece that just went to print today, Mike Pence Takes the Fight to Trump. I watched the Pence announcement yesterday and was really intrigued. I actually talked with Newt Gingrich about this a little earlier. I specifically noted, I mean, there was a lot said, I know, but the one thing that I thought was particularly interesting, and I'm paraphrasing, was when Pence said, "We must reject the siren song of populism and return to conservative values or principles or whatever." And I thought to myself, it's going to be, I like Pence personally, just as an aside, but I thought that's going to be kind of a weird needle for him to thread, considering he ran alongside Trump, for better or worse, and was a very loyal foot soldier. I get the January 6th stuff and the, most of the media was very intrigued about him trying to differentiate himself on the January 6th stuff. But up to that, is there daylight between the two of them, really?
So when I talked to Pence on Saturday, I asked him a really basic question, and that was, what are your differences with the former president? And he laid out three. He noted that on occasion, it seems that Donald Trump has retreated a bit from his anti-abortion stance. He said that Trump and Biden basically had the same policy when it came to entitlements, which is to do nothing. And then he argued that Trump's foreign policy on Ukraine is sort of a retreat from the world stage. But what I was so interested for and what I was watching for in his remarks is exactly what you said, right? Like, how does he run on his record as the VP of the former president who is also running? And the way he tried to thread the needle, we'll see if it works, is he said, Donald Trump ran as a conservative in 2016. And he promised to govern as one. When I was there with him, that's exactly what we did. But Donald Trump has made no such promises. We'll see if Republican voters want that kind of rhetoric, if they're at all intrigued. But Jonathan Swan over the New York Times makes a very good point, and that is that in previous contests, primary voters, they wanted the most conservative candidate. Pence is probably the one of the more conservative candidates in the field right now, but does that position on policy, does that translate to electoral success?
Yeah, I've been fascinated with this, and it was something that I kind of, not patting myself on the back, and I don't know that it took a rocket scientist to figure out, but I was kind of noticing once DeSantis formally got in, it seemed very clear that very quickly, and in fact, I can confirm this now, having talked to some DeSantis insiders, that they do their lane seems to be, we're the culture people. We fight on schools, we fight Disney, we fight on the trans stuff, we fight on the gender transition stuff for kids, we fight on that stuff. That's not Trump's lane. Trump doesn't do that. He doesn't care about that stuff. And I think that's really interesting in a Republican primary, but I'm not so sure in a general. It almost feels like Trump might better understand that and I'm not saying I don't support those cultural issues that DeSantis fights. I'm just saying Trump seems to say at times, I'm not into talking about woke. He'll actually say that. And I wonder if that appeals more broadly, and he senses that, if possible.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in LA.
You were living in LA? How was that?
Yeah. Let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, because here you've got this president. I remember sitting in the Oval Office, and he said, "Yeah, we're in a culture war." And that was shortly after his press secretary Kayleigh McEnany had said from the briefing room and the podium in the briefing room that no, we weren't. That the administration wasn't interested in infighting a culture war. This is Donald Trump, who has previously said things like everything woke goes to hell, I mean, and yet he's kind of retreated from that. I don't know if he is focusing so much on what will win in a general. Certainly, if his polling numbers hold steady, he won't have to tack too far to the right to defeat these challengers. But maybe it's also just that DeSantis is talking about some of these woke culture war issues so often that Trump wants to deflate the issue, that he doesn't want to give it any oxygen. We'll see. But I think the larger point that is getting forgotten in a lot of this, and this is something that I think I realized during the Bud Light fiasco, is Don Jr. says, "All right, conservatives, call off your dogs, no more
That's right.
boycotting of Anheuser-Busch." And that is incongruent with where the base was at that moment. It doesn't vibe with what they've done on Target with Anheuser-Busch, with the Dodgers. And I think that perhaps some of that might reflect the fact that in his current campaign, Donald Trump is very much the establishment.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's an interesting perspective. I had not heard that before. Donald Trump as the establishment. It is interesting, as now it sounds like, and Philip Wegman with us again, Real Clear Politics, White House correspondent. As now this Jack Smith character sounds like he's ready to bring another indictment, I do opine that this will only galvanize people again. If in fact people get wobbly or tired or bored with or whatever people assign to the Trump loyal out there or Trump's base, a lot of people, I know DeSantis and others are very hopeful that shrinking and people are tiring and moving away or whatever, or that he's establishment, as you just said. All it takes is some overzealous prosecutor like a Jack Smith, and I would submit that everybody who ever, well, not everybody, but a good chunk of the people that passionately supported him before are right back with him, squarely behind him again, saying, "Let's go. If he's willing to fight, I'll fight with him." You agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and we've seen this borne out in the poll numbers. Things that would be disastrous for other politicians end up fueling his rise. And I think the reason why is that Donald Trump figured out very early on that martyrdom is currency in politics. You had a lot of Tea Party heroes, guys like Senator Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and others, who might not be successful in their policy fights. They might ultimately fail, but then they would go back to the base and say, hey, we lost, but we fought. And Donald Trump has already identified fighting as the number one characteristic for any GOP champion, and he's even codified this. There was a meme not long ago that the president shared on Twitter when he was still on there, where he said, they're not coming after me. In reality, they're coming after you. I'm just in the way. Now, that might be kind of ham-fisted. Maybe that obscures some of the actual truth. But that's the way the former president is presenting himself. He's going to the base and he's saying, look, they're coming after me in all this litigation, all these investigations. That's because they don't want me to govern on behalf of you. And so, presenting himself as a bit of a victim, as someone who is worthy of sympathy, certainly has made the core Republican base love him more, not less.
Yeah, and Phil Wegman, I also wonder, with this indictment coming, and maybe even a third, I mean, you're talking about maybe a thrice indicted, you know, Republican candidate who may well get the nomination and then run for president, all of which I think are probably, you know, feathers in his cap, frankly, with his base. Andy McCarthy reminds me that there's nothing that prohibits a man from running for office just because he's under indictment or even found guilty after an indictment. Nothing stops him from running anyway. And it's uncharted waters. We've never seen anything like this before, but it could be. It could happen.
Yeah, and once again, what did Donald Trump say at CPAC when James Rosen asked him if he would still pursue the presidency if indicted? In so many words, Trump said, yeah, I'd probably gain votes. We are absolutely in uncharted territory. And the Republican base, they don't care, because they are very angry about the way that the former president was treated, and they certainly don't like the current president.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, I ask you quickly about the Biden stuff, these documents. I'm just seeing this afternoon as I'm watching that Fox News is suggesting, I guess I just saw the breaking banner headline, so I can't hear what they're saying. But the report suggests that this document that they have, that Biden accepted money as a potential bribe, this document that they were seeking from Christopher Wray, that maybe it doesn't have the bombshell in it that Republicans were claiming. Have you heard anything? Do you know anything about that?
So we're following this very closely, because obviously if there is anything more than the normal pay-to-play accusations here, that's something that I think independent and moderate voters who swung for President Biden during the previous election are going to pay close attention to. Remember, his promise was to return to normalcy. One of the things is, though, I think that we have such little faith in our institutions and in our leaders that there's a risk of everyday Americans saying, oh, corruption? Well, I assumed all of them were corrupt. And so we'll see as this goes on if this was just Hunter Biden trading on his father's name, or if, in fact, the president's family was able to leverage their position to actually change policy. So far, the White House has sort of sidestepped all of this. They are watching James Comer in the House Oversight Committee and Senator Chuck Grassley in the Senate very closely, but they don't see this as an existential threat. Again, because for Democrats, you know, some of these moderates or some of these more progressive voters, they might not think Biden is their first choice, but Biden is essentially saying, look, the enemy is at the gates. Trump is going to run again. Any hesitation that you might have with my policy or with my personal shortcomings, that pales in comparison to potentially having four more years of Donald Trump.
He ended the press conference today. I did catch this, Phil. He said, and I can't, this is a direct quote, "I'm honest." Those were his last words before he walked away from the podium. "I'm honest." There might be some people with some questions about that.
We only have to take the politicians at their word, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, look, we've pressed the administration on this question. He said during the previous campaign that he never spoke with his son about his business dealings. We know that that's patently false because there's a voicemail of the current president talking to his son, Hunter Biden, about a New York Times expose on his business dealings, you know, that came out as a result of the laptop leak. I think that the current president, you know, he's banking on his reputation, and, you know, we'll see what comes out later on. But some of the claims that he has made, they do not hold water.
Well, I'm glad you missed today's presser because we're better for conversing with you, Philip Wegman, at Real Clear Politics. He's the White House correspondent, and the most recent piece today went to print. Mike Pence takes the fight to Trump. Thank you, Phil, very much. Great to catch up.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.